with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved. Here is Dr. James Hauck.
Been in you. I'll say more about that as we go along here in tonight's broadcast, but I am very excited to be with you here today, every other Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And each and every week, these broadcasts are dedicated to the integration of our spirituality and our mental health, all placed within the greater context of our relationships, the relationship that we have with ourselves, relationship that we have with others, and our relationship with God or the divine. I am Dr. James Hauck, and if you would like more information about me or to leave me your comments about today's show, I invite you to visit the website. It's www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. That's www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. And if you would like to call in and be part of the show and join the discussion tonight, that would be great. The number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And I'll be taking your calls after the break in the second half of the show tonight. And these broadcasts are now podcasted, just in case you want to go back and listen again. You can go back into the archives and listen to previous shows as well, just in case you can't spend the whole hour with me. That's okay, because then you can catch the full show at a later time. So at the beginning of these broadcasts, I always like to share with new audience members where I'm coming from in terms of exactly what is reclaiming authenticity. And this term, reclaiming authenticity, just basically comes from a deep-seated belief that I carry around in myself, that all of us come into the world already equipped and graced, you know, with everything that we need in this life in terms of our giftedness, our skills, our talents, our strengths, our character traits, and so forth, you know, and how we live out our giftedness is in and through various relationships. Often within the context of relationships, those gifts and skills have a chance to really flourish. Because, you know, it doesn't really matter who we are or where we were born, per se, or into what family we were placed, because we are social beings. In other words, ours is a world filled with relationships. And indeed, we are social beings who often spend our lives just trying to make sense out of our world by trying to find our place in the world. And who are we related to? And how does that work? How do we live that out? How do we come to understand that? And what do we do, you know, on a daily, weekly, monthly, yearly basis? Because, you know, as social beings, it's often within the context of relationships that we experience tremendous pain and suffering. We just can't get around it. We cannot, you know, whether it's intentional acts of betrayal or cruelty that somebody has inflicted against us, or maybe accidental, or vice versa, to simply being in the wrong place at the wrong time. Many people often bear the scars of the physical and psychological and emotional and spiritual woundedness. And you know, when you think about it, the physical wounds that people have experienced are perhaps the easiest to spot to one degree or another. But you know, the emotional, the psychological, even the spiritual woundedness that people have experienced may be less evident, but can be even more devastating because there may be a stigma attached to those emotional, psychological, even spiritual wounds. But, you know, here is where I believe is the irony of life, that just as how often we receive, you know, are these deep physical, emotional, psychological, even spiritual wounds in relationships. The tragedy is that, you know, how often do we go along in life and perhaps due to some unpleasant experiences that we really tend to hide our giftedness, or we push away our passions, we push them down, or we deny our skills and our uniqueness. We push that way down so others cannot see it, all because we were told, this, you know, however old we were, that we would never amount to anything, or that we would never measure up to another person's standards, or whatever other voice we heard us telling us that there's really nothing special to us. And that's just simply not true, but somewhere along the way we bought into that. You know, we started to believe what other people were telling us or showing us or whatever. And yet, here's the irony. We can discover our greatest sense and source of healing, strength, peace, forgiveness, and love through healthier relationships. And these relationships just might be within our own families, coworkers, colleagues, friends. However, because we are in relationship with others, once we are transformed, once we find our healing, and we are transforming on a daily basis, we also end up transforming others on one degree or another by our presence, our grace, and our understanding. See, how we relate to one another in relationship can also be healing. We're going to relate to one another differently. You know, because since we are healing and seeing ourselves differently, we will inevitably begin to see others differently and treat one another differently. But first, forgiveness, kindness, and compassion begins with how we treat ourselves. We have to be forgiving of ourselves. We have to be kind with ourselves. We have to be compassionate and patient with ourselves. Because when we are compassionate with others, we then can be more compassionate with others. And when we are more forgiving with ourselves, we then can be more forgiving with others. And when we're able to live in gratitude with ourselves, we then discover how this opens up our hearts to live and see and be in gratitude with others. So all in all, transformation, first and foremost, begins with us. And this is what reclaiming authenticity is all about. Reclaiming those things which have always been in you, what you came into the world with. And so if you have a hard time seeing that giftedness in yourself, those strengths and so forth, the personality, ask yourself, where do they go? Where are they? What needs to heal in me so that those things can come to the surface and I can reclaim those things that have been lying dormant? Or as Richard Rohr puts it, your true self is who you are and always have been in God. You know, the great surprise and irony is that you, or who you think you are, really has nothing to do with its original creation or its demise. It's sort of disempowering and utterly empowering at the same time, but all you can do is nurture it. Your true self is who you are and always have been in God. So all in all, becoming who you are is all about understanding relationships. It's about remembering that you are related and connected to all people and all things. People, the land, those who have come before you, those who are with you presently, and those who will come after you in this life. There is such a connectedness that we have. We just don't realize it. But when we do, it makes all the difference, not just in our lives, but in the lives of everyone, all people, all things. Well, thanks for tuning in tonight. Tonight's show is entitled Silent No More, Celebrating Feminine Energy in All Things. Well, this coming Sunday, if you haven't already marked on your calendar, shame on you. But, this coming Sunday is Mother's Day. And if you're like me and perhaps the rest of the world, your thoughts are focused on the women in our lives, you know, who have not only given birth to us, but also, whether or not they were related to us, nurtured us in their own way and taught us life lessons, whether it be formally in school or informally out of school. Or maybe they've been instrumental in some way by shaping us into the men and women we are today. And you know, for the past couple of weeks, if not sooner, we have been bombarded with all kinds of advertisements for Mother's Day hints for gifts, such as flowers, jewelry, cards, and dinner reservations. But surprisingly, few people know about the origins of Mother's Day, which actually took place back in the early 1900s. Well, as the stories go, it was all started by a woman named Anna Jarvis, who led a campaign for an official holiday honoring mothers in 1905, the year her own mother died. The first large-scale celebration of Mother's Day was in 1908, when Jarvis held a public memorial for her mother in her hometown of Grafton, West Virginia. You see, Anna's mother played a vital role, a very important role, uniting women for good causes. And Anne Revis Jarvis cared for wounded soldiers on both sides of the field during the Civil War. And in its aftermath, she organized a Mother's Friendship Day, the goal of which was to foster reconciliation between the former Union and Confederate soldiers by having them come together along with their mothers from both sides. And over the next few years, her daughter Anna pushed to have this holiday officially recognized, and it was celebrated increasingly in more and more states around the United States. But finally, in 1914, President Woodrow Wilson signed a proclamation making Mother's Day an official holiday, which was to always take place on the second Sunday of May, which is still celebrated today. However, in the first few years of the holiday's official existence, shall we say, Anna Jarvis observed that florists and candy makers, card makers, even charities use Mother's Day as a way to make an extra buck or two. So, really, has anything changed since then? Not so, but we're still going to, you know, commemorate Mother's Day. Now, the commercialization of Mother's Day, according to Jarvis, defeated the whole purpose, the whole point of a holiday that was supposed to be about celebrating the personal, individual connection between a mother and her children. Now, today, many churches and other organizations are preparing for record attendances by mothers and their families. And even in schools this week, perhaps children may have made cards or grown little carnations or marigolds to be given to their mothers this Sunday. Actually, they give it to her on Friday when they get home from school. And churches, as I said, are preparing for surges in attendance with the likes of what was seen on Easter or even on Christmas Eve. And there's going to be flowers galore given out to mothers and grandmothers, from marigolds and carnations and roses and adoring children to roadside shops selling bouquets and orchids for those who need to be reminded to pick up flowers for the mothers in their lives. Now, despite the wonder, despite the splendor and the joy demonstrated by many in celebrating Mother's Day, Mother's Day for many women and men has become a constant reminder of painful experiences. You see, for many, their biological mothers may not have had the capacity for nurturing them, let alone maybe they were unable to provide a safe home for them to grow up in. You see, many children may have faced harsh disciplines and shame as they experienced generational traumas that were being lived out over and over again and again. And there are also women and men who have always wanted to be mothers, who always wanted to be fathers, who always wanted to be grandmothers, and who always wanted to be grandfathers, who want to have children, but for one reason or another, they've experienced miscarriages or stillbirths or other medical issues. Or maybe they've lost a child or children to disease or illnesses, even random accidents that have exacerbated their pain and grief each year on Mother's Day. So with that all being said, I want to share with you a prayer that I came across years ago that is probably one of the best Mother's Day prayers. And you just listen to it as I read it, and you'll see what I mean. But I think it really captures the celebration and gratitude and honor for all women. It's just simply entitled, A Prayer for Mothers. For our mothers who have given us life and love, that we may show them reverence and love, we pray to the Lord. For mothers who have lost a child through death, that their faith may give them hope, and their family and friends support and console them, we pray to the Lord. For women, though without children of their own, who, like mothers, have nurtured and cared for us, we pray to the Lord. For mothers who have been unable to be a source of strength, who have not responded to their children, and have not sustained their families, we pray to the Lord. Loving God, as a mother gives life and nourishment to her children, so you watch over your people. Bless these women, that they may be strengthened as mothers. Let the example of their faith and love shine forth, and grant that we, their sons and daughters, may honor them always with a spirit of profound respect. Amen. See, like I said, that is just a very powerful prayer that honors all women. Because I know many women who want to stay home, who will not go to church because of the messages, you know, and rightly so, honoring women who are mothers. But for one reason or another, they have been unable to have children, or they may have lost a child, and it's just very painful for them to sit there. So I just want to encourage you that if you happen to be in a church or a synagogue or a mosque in which mothers are being honored, or at another function in which mothers are being honored, and you see a woman there who is looking downward or is looking very sad, just stand next to her, remind her that she is just as important, that she has just as much nurturing qualities as mothers. She can cultivate those gifts, and that she has a lot to teach the up-and-coming younger generations. And if she is so inclined, listen to her story. Because she needs to share it, and she needs somebody to listen to. You know, for as much as we celebrate the warmth and love and nurturing women who have provided for humanity, there were and are many, many women who did not have the capacity for nurturing, let alone providing a safe home for children to grow up in. In fact, down through the centuries, and another history lesson here, many women were the scourge, or were scourged, I should say, to bear the shame of their families and forced into an expulsion and or made to suffer in silence. And yet, suffering, pain, and misery no longer have the power over women when they realize the power they have always possessed from the very beginning. Their voices. Yeah, down through the centuries, and centuries upon centuries, and even today, women have been forced into silence through physical, emotional, psychological, and the spiritual pain through intimidation or coercion or even violence done to them. And you know, down through the centuries and even today, the thought was and is, you take away a woman's voice and you have taken away her power. But when women find their voices, look out and get out of their way. They will no longer be silent. And even Christ in the gospel stories had more positive interactions with women, transforming them by removing their socially imposed stigmas and empowering them to find and use their voices to empower others. But you know, as a counseling educator, clinician, and pastoral professional, I'm often saddened by women who believe that when it comes to addressing their physical, psychological, emotional, and even spiritual problems, they still might consider themselves powerless and without a voice. Perhaps this is a result of never feeling valued or never being allowed to use their voice. Now, admittedly, many people are unable to perceive their insights and strengths as if they cannot see themselves capable of healing or let alone achieving anything meaningful in their lives or with their lives. And most of the time, people are content to live for brief moments of joy and celebration. You know, we just mark off those times, you know, those transitional milestones, as it were, of, let's say, baptisms and marriages and birthdays and graduations, promotions, retirements, family get-togethers, so on and so forth. And furthermore, when it comes to wrestling with life's questions in general, you know, many people are often overwhelmed not only by the concept that the answers they seek often lie within themselves, but also they're overwhelmed with the belief that that inner freedom, peace, joy, and unconditional love are all too good to be true for them. And yet, the greatest effect hearing the cries of others has on us not only comes from getting in touch with our own soul's voice, but it also awakens us even further to hear the cries of those who have no voice today. Because there has always existed in society a pattern of disenfranchising the weak and the wounded, people who have been labeled as unlovable, untouchable, and therefore unreachable. And if society has done that, if society continues to do this, it doesn't take long for women and men and children to start labeling themselves as unlovable, untouchable, unreachable. You know, for some, disenfranchisement was due to their disease or illness. For others, it was due to their poverty. Still, for others, it was due to their gender or race or religion or politics or social class. And many in society preferred that such people not be seen, let alone heard from. And yet, just as the cries of our ancestors and those who have been victims of crimes against humanity can never be silenced, so too are the cries of the disenfranchised heard above the din of everyday life. Their cries are not only heard deep within the soul, but also their pain can be given a voice through those who speak for them. Well, I would really like to hear your heart on this subject. So if you would like to call in and share your Mother's Day story or how you had found your voice, that number again is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And I'll be taking your calls after the break. Again, you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, and I'm your host, Dr. James Houck. I'll be back with you in 1 minute. Thank you. Okay, welcome back. I am Dr. James Hauck, and you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Well, earlier in the show, I was talking about how, despite the wonder and splendor and joy demonstrated by many in celebrating Mother's Day, rightly so, Mother's Day, for many women and men, have become a constant reminder of painful experiences. For many, you know, their biological mothers just did not have the capacity for nurturing them, let alone providing a safe home for them to grow up in. Many children faced harsh disciplines and shame as they experienced generational traumas that were being lived out over again and again. And perhaps there were also women and men who wanted to be mothers, who wanted to be fathers, grandmothers and grandfathers, who wanted to have children, but for one reason or another have experienced miscarriages or stillbirths or other medical issues, or who have lost children to diseases or illnesses or even random accidents that have exacerbated their pain and grief each year on Mother's Day. You see, I can certainly relate to this. My wife and I can certainly relate to this because before we had our children, we had experienced three miscarriages. And it was a very painful time in our lives. And I learned a very valuable lesson, not just the pain of, you know, what parents go through, but also as a husband. And just how men grieve differently, not just because we're men. I mean, come on, guys, you know, not just because we're men, but because of what society tells us how we should act as men, as fathers, as husbands. You know, I was grieving just as hard as my wife with those three miscarriages. And we wondered whether or not we were ever going to be able to have children. And the third miscarriage was particularly difficult for me because it was during the second trimester. And I was just starting to bond with the child. And, you know, I was in school at the time, in college, and I was supposed to be paying attention. But I was sitting there with my little, you know, notebook and everything, and I was jotting down first and middle and, you know, names for the child, for, you know, boys and girls. And I won't go into all the details, but, you know, my wife woke up one morning and within a matter of hours, that was it. The child was gone. And it felt for both of us as if somebody ripped the rug out from under us and we landed flat on our faces. And it took me a long time to be able to trust God with that kind of vulnerability again. You know, it's like I thought this was going to be different. I didn't realize how painful this was going to be. And my wife, who just, she didn't want to hear it. She couldn't stand, I couldn't stand to see other parents playing with their children. And it was no fault of them. It was just, it was a constant reminder of, are we going to have children ever? And so certainly going to church on Mother's Day, even Father's Day coming up here in June, was very painful for us. Again, not because we didn't want to begrudge anybody from celebrating, you know, mothers, and we certainly had our own mothers to celebrate that day with. But again, it was just a constant, constant reminder of just, you know, what we may not be allowed to have. Okay. So for me, Mother's Day has always been about an emotional mixture of celebration, gratitude, and certainly awakened a compassion in me, as I believe Mother's Day ought to be more inclusive and honor all women at any age, especially women who are part of our lineage. Because, you know, growing up, I had a mother, and just a wonderful mother indeed. She was a stay-at-home mom back in the day, and she's now, you know, she died when she was 66. But I've had other women growing up in my life, women who were neighbor ladies That's how I refer to them, neighbor ladies. And they were very kind, very compassionate. They, you know, would give me a cookie every now and then. Or I remember one neighbor lady that she would always invite me to go along to an orchard and help her pick strawberries and everything else. And then we'd bring them all home, and she'd give me like a little peck of strawberries for myself. And she spent the rest of the summer canning everything within an inch of its life. And she loved to do that. And she made some of the most wonderful jams and jellies that I've ever tasted. And so in her own way, you know, she was teaching me and just how that relationship that we had just was nurtured along the way. And I've had other teachers. I've had other clergy women who very compassionate, very understanding, very nurturing indeed. And women, you know, the gender roles are out there in society are just changing all over the place. And the jobs that were off limits to women back in the 60s, 70s, and 80s are now commonplace, such as women in combat. And they still honor themselves and prize themselves as being mothers. And so, again, society has kind of opened a door for, you know, to be more inclusive and certainly honoring all women at any age. But there's a little bit of stigma still out there that women feel that twinge at times. So, again, I just invite you to be more inclusive and honor all the women in your life. Especially those who, as you can trace back through your family line, your family tree, and just imagine what it was like as they lived back in the day, and the sacrifices that they made and what it took to raise their family and so on and so forth. Even if they have experienced the loss of children or miscarriages and stillbirths or even random accidents, life found a way because you're still here. You were born. So life found a way to move forward. And you know, interestingly enough, I've had the honor of working with generations of women who have been forced to carry heartbreaking, emotional, psychological, physiological, and even spiritual wounds in silence. You know, there are many, many times when women who live today carry these burdens from generations and generations ago by the way they were raised or even the trauma that was handed down to them in their DNA. Okay? And yet there's also, you know, I'm very encouraged by this, there's also a tremendous healing for women who once they find and use their voices, they can transform those emotional, psychological, and spiritual wounds, and even their physical wounds, and seek to empower all people, especially those women who have yet to be born. They see such a connectedness in and of themselves to all things and all people. And for me, I believe the impact of healing intergenerational trauma can best be understood as a starburst. Okay, and this is what I mean by that. You know, much like the sparklers that children light on the 4th of July, you know, that the sparkle just goes out in all directions. As one person heals from trauma, let's say, that energy radiates out in all directions and time and dimensions. And all relationships, regardless of time and space, are transformed. Even if there is a chance encounter, even when you just run into somebody that you are meeting for the very first time, how you treat them is going to be different because you're different. You find your healing. And this aspect of woundedness and healing is how interconnected we are as human beings and the world in which we live. Just imagine how a single negative thought carries enough destructive energy to affect hundreds, if not thousands, of people each day. Now, imagine that same potential a single positive thought has. That's power. Well, years ago, I was counseling a young girl named Kayla. Yeah, not her real name. It's a pseudonym, okay? Kayla. She was a 15-year-old high school student who was acting out in school, just to say the least. I won't go into like everything that she was doing, but she went from being a straight-A student to getting C's and D's in the course of a semester. And of course, this caught the attention of her parents. And as Kayla started experimenting with various drugs, her friends and family noticed significant behavioral changes in her. She became more irritable. She became more hostile. And she became uninterested in normal teenage activities. And she was diagnosed with a major depressive disorder, and she was assessed for suicide ideation, and she was prescribed a low-dose antidepressant medication. And she was doing okay. She was doing okay. We were making some headway. She was telling her story. She just had a hard time finding her voice and her healing. Now, in addition to treating her individually, Kayla also agreed the therapy sessions we had that it would include her mother and her grandmother. Okay. And when I approached mom and grandma for this, they said, of course, we would love to, sit with her because they wanted to help her. Okay. And Kayla was also open to this. I don't know if it's going to work, but okay, I can have mom and grandma here. Okay, so at the first meeting, I set the ground rules for this intergenerational therapy, explaining that we're not here to place blame on anyone, but to help Kayla get better. Now, to get an accurate history of the family, I started to draw a genogram on a dry erase board that I had in my office. And for those of you who may not be familiar with that, a genogram is a visual representation, a drawing of a multi-generational family tree that highlights relationships among family members down through, three, four generations. And as the names of cousins and aunts and uncles and significant family events filled the board, I explained how emotional and behavioral patterns are not only mirrored, but also handed down through the generations, much in the same way that illnesses and diseases come down through the generations. Now, over a few sessions with her mother and grandmother, these metaphorical dots started to connect for Kayla and her mother as the stories from Kayla's grandmother filled in the details from her perspective. And grandma explained how she was raised by her mother and grandmother and what it was like growing up, as she put it, in her day. And she shared how men and women were treated differently. And she shared how, people lived with different social and religious expectations and why jobs were scarce at times. She also shared why so-and-so had extramarital affairs, and who struggled with excessive drinking and drugs, and even the reason why certain families had to move away from the neighborhood. And all of a sudden, through grandma's memories, these stories, there were now five generations of women in the room with us. As it appeared that the ground rules for therapy gave Kayla's grandmother permission to talk about the family secrets. Now, interestingly, every now and then I would look over to, Kayla, and I noticed how her body language went from sitting with her hands just covering her face to listening carefully to her grandmother's stories. And I could see in Kayla's eyes that she was starting to understand that she was not crazy, lazy, ugly, or stupid, or any other negative belief that she told herself. And as we talked over the next few weeks, this genogram depicted generations of socioeconomic struggles and alcohol dependence and family attitudes around sexual guilt and shame and grandma's one big secret, her abortion at age 19. Through her tears, Grandma confessed that she had been carrying the guilt and shame of her abortion for decades. In fact, every now and then, she said, she could hear her baby's cry in her dreams. And although abortion was illegal back in the day, Grandma said that she had an abortion anyway. She found a way in order to spare her family shame at the time of having a child out of wedlock. And she also shared that after she was married, she wanted to tell her husband many, many times, but she still feared what he might do. She still feared of being shunned or ridiculed or shamed or whatever. And immediately, when Kayla heard this, she burst into tears as she confessed that before last semester, she became pregnant and she too had an abortion. She too could not bear shaming the family with this unplanned pregnancy since they had so many high hopes for her. And all at once, the emotional floodgates, let's say, were opened as three generations of women sat there and sobbed in each other's arms. The relief from carrying these secrets was obvious in both grandmother and granddaughter. And although Kayla's mother, who actually sat in the middle of them, had no idea of these secrets, she too realized that for generations who did not believe in airing dirty laundry, suffering in silence is a horrible burden to bear. In the weeks that followed, then, Kayla, her mother, and her grandmother continued to talk through generational struggles and unspoken lessons that characterized their family. Kayla and her grandmother even wrote letters of forgiveness to the children they aborted. Grandma also brought in some old photos, which added flesh and blood and soul to the stories that she kept sharing. And the themes of forgive me, I forgive you, thank you, and I love you continued to empower these women to not only heal generations long since past, but also impart their hopes and dreams for generations yet to be born. Because you see, when women heal from their wounds and find and use their voice, they transform humanity by actually helping men become better men. And when men find their healing and transformation, they not only become better men, but they also empower women to become better women. See, we all have masculine and feminine energy that has this potential to heal, enhance, and empower humanity. But so often, societies cause division among men and women, males and females, by highlighting the differences and, you know, making one generation out to be better or stronger or faster or wiser or whatever over and against the other. But instead, one complements the other, and vice versa. In fact, I believe that men have an incomplete understanding of who they are when they dismiss the feminine energies within themselves. And likewise, I also believe that women have an incomplete understanding of who they are when they dismiss the masculine energies within themselves. When women heal from their wounds and find and use their voice, they certainly transform humanity. See, this feminine masculine completeness is something that I believe humanity today is slowly starting to wake up to, but has not fully grasped. In fact, I believe, kind of interesting, I believe the children being born today already carry a sense of this completeness in their own energy. I think they're just going to know this. I don't think they're going to have to be told. I think it's going to be something that they can recognize and they're going to embrace, because they're not going to see it as a competition. They're going to see it as complementary, a completeness. I mean, just imagine what Mother's Day would look like if we honored not just the role of mothers and mother figures in our lives, but also honored and celebrated the feminine energy in and through all things. Well, there is such a place I had the pleasure to visit. Vatsalya Gram in Vrindavan, India. Now, Vrindavan was the birthplace of Krishna. It's about, you know, mid-southern India, a couple of hours south of Delhi. And it's called Param Shakti Peeth. It's a non-profit, non-governmental and independent organization, which was actually registered under the Societies Registration Act, 1860. Now, Param Shakti Peeth has been working since, I think it was incepted in 1992, to mainstream the marginalized members of society, which puts a priority on children and women, and mitigate other socioeconomic inequalities that have just been prevailing in India that are detrimental to inclusive development, and also impedes the growth of the nation as a whole. Now, this collective experience, for lack of a better phrase, insight and diverse perspectives of the founders, you know, has really been a solid foundation of the belief that the welfare and empowerment of children and women, especially of the marginalized communities, are critical for bridging the societal disparities and alleviating poverty. They have also been the source of a holistic approach to development and creating the framework necessary to meet the central goal of that particular organization. They believe in providing a positive impact in the lives of people by helping them reduce their problems. And at Vatsalya Gram, women of all ages dedicate their lives caring for children who are not blood related to them, but are emotionally attached. And each child is raised with so much care and affection that they get ample opportunities to grow and become a responsible citizen of the nation. And ladies and gentlemen, I have to tell you, I've seen it with my own eyes. I see how these children's lives have just transformed wonderfully. I have seen how women of all ages who call themselves and mothers and grandmothers and aunties, and I see how their lives have been transformed because of how they care for the children. And you know, healing our ancestors from intergenerational trauma really awakens and reinforces this connection that we have. And when we awaken to our soul consciousness, we are also empowered to live out our God connection in human relationships. And each day at Vatsalya Gram in India, I was reminded of this truth as I was greeted with folded hands, a slight bow, and the gentle expression of Namaste. The light of the soul in me bows to the light of the soul in you. Yeah, it's true. Tremendous courage is needed to heal intergenerational trauma and embrace the truth and transform into the beautiful soul that you already are. And whether or not you know much about your ancestral line, or whether or not you see yourself coming from a long line of slaves or slave owners or oppressors or murderers or healers or victims or blue-collar workers, white-collar workers, victims of addictions or suicide, divorce, or healthier relationships, these all have a physical, emotional, psychological, and spiritual component to discovering the truth. And yes, it's true. The truth does set us free, but it's a freedom that comes with a tremendous amount of responsibility to continue the soul healing process in the lives of those who have come before us, those who are with us today, and those who have yet to be born. I'm Dr. James Houck, and you have been listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Thank you for spending this hour with me, and I'd just appreciate if you would drop me an email and let me know your thoughts about tonight's broadcast. So I will be back with you in 2 weeks. So until that time, everybody be safe, everybody be content and happy, and everybody behave yourselves. Take care. Good night.
For an answer, or just to leave 1,000 comments, or prodding around to buy a book by Dr. Houck, it's all there. Just wander over to ReclaimingAuthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Pacific, on BBS Radio TV.